T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, back to Not Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
7:02. Roxy in for Chad this week, along with Joe Fortenbaugh, Lorenzo Neal. 95.7 The Game. It's the 4K a day national cash contest at 95.7 The Game. You just heard the code word wall. Text the code word wall to 72881 before 15 past the hour for your chance to win $1,000. Be listening every day at 7 a.m., 11 a.m., 2 p.m., 5 p.m. for your chance to win $1,000. Text, message, and data rates may apply. The A's back at it tonight. Game two of a three-game set with the Houston Astros after another solid win for the A's behind Kendall Graveman last night. Chris Davis hits another home run. Yonder Alonso continues his assault on the Houston Astros, a 7-4 win for the green and gold last night. They'll send Dylan Overton to the mound tonight, 7:05 first pitch at the Coliseum. Again, a reminder, 5 o'clock in the East Side Club tonight. It is the Root Beer Float event. It's the 17th annual. Heather Rajeski from the A's front office was in here yesterday to promote the event. Players, A's coaches, celebrities, broadcasters, it'll be a great time. Again, from 5 to 7 in the East Side Club tonight, prior to the ball game with the Houston Astros, which starts at 7:05. Coming up in the bottom of the hour, we'll catch up with a voice of the Boston Red Sox, Dave O'Brien, as the Giants continue their road trip to start the second half after an off day yesterday. They're at Fenway tonight. A brief two-game set going up with the Boston Red Sox. So Dave O'Brien, also of ESPN, will preview that for us. Some news surrounding the NFL, and Joe, there was there's talk about data chips going into the football, and I found this interesting, and the way they want to use these data chips inside the football, not the way a lot of people think they would be or what they would be used for.
They're going to use these new footballs during the preseason. And if I'm understanding correctly, during Thursday night football, everyone has one Thursday game. So I guess it's fair that everyone will have to deal with this. It'll be able to measure things like the speed of a quarterback's throw. So perhaps that data will become useful in the scouting and evaluation process. And then they also want to be able to employ its benefits in the kicking game. Understand, try to how to make the game safer, et cetera, et cetera. Look, you put a chip in a football, the possibilities are endless in terms of the data you'll be able to pull in. But the NFL is getting ahead of itself here for one reason. If you want to start employing technology, fix replay, then worry about everything else. Figure out what a catch is.
That's the most important thing to me.
Right.
Is figure out what a catch is.
Get what happens on the field correct before you need to adjust the football and start monitoring the speed of a throw and everything else. Don't worry about all that. Let's get replay right. I'm tired of the conversation that centers around, well, human error is a part of the game and this and that. Look, bottom line, get it right. We just want it to be right. In baseball, I can understand some of the argument. The sport's a little longer in general. But people consume football at such a voracious rate, and even in the off season, right? We could talk about football every minute on this show for the next 2 weeks, and we'd rate
fine.
Here
we are in July.
You'd rate fine talking about football any time of the year. Exactly. Exactly. No one is going to be upset dedicating an extra 6 or 7 minutes to a game to make sure the calls are right. So figure out a way to take technology, apply it to replay, and get the calls right, rather than a situation where a coach is out of challenges and then he can't figure out how to check in on something that was clearly broken. These guys are humans. They are going to screw up. That's the one thing we can bank on with humanity. Humans do one thing very, very well. They screw up. They're not perfect.
So
let's freaking take the technology and apply it to replay.
Well, we talked about the PSI yesterday with the new – we talked about Tom Brady yesterday. But now, according to ESPN, NFL data chips won't provide – the ball's PSI.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
That was nice.
I believe the comment, I believe the comment was if they needed them to, they could. They could. They're not putting him in there for that.
Well, we're not going to do it. Even though we could do it, we're not going to.
No, why would you? Why not just spend $20-plus million on a lawsuit to suspend your most marketable player? You realize that's what the NFL did, right?
Exactly.
They took the face of the league, the most marketable player in the league, and they found a way to take him out of the equation for 4 weeks. That's a good business model. Maybe you should take Bryce Harper and suspend him for 5 years. See how that works in MLB.
Just for the heck of it. Well, I mean, what would you use these for, Lo? Why do you think that these could benefit the game if you put a computer chip in the football?
I think that when you look at sports, this whole movement of analytics, sophisticated scouting, it's a conversation piece. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it necessarily improves the game that much, but now you can actually see where the chip, when it landed on the ground, but then it's going to be okay when the chip hit the ground with the ball, where was his elbow? So you're still going to have that. But it's a conversation piece. And now you can talk about the revolution of the ball. How many times, wow, he's throwing the ball that far because he's squeezing it tighter, it's spinning faster, there's centrifugal force. So it gives more conversation piece. Sports is something you talk about at jobs and work. And I think for a lot of people that necessarily doesn't know the sports or haven't played the sports, but when you can talk the numbers or talk about the makeup, the integral parts of the game, it makes it more interesting. I really believe that. I think that it's great because people want to talk more about games. You look at the sports world now with this huge push in analytics and how much more it's evolving the game and evolving the conversation. So I think that is a huge reason for the push.
Well, they're talking about these data chips being able to help in terms of the field goal, right? That it's supposed to be able to tell you if a ball sails over the upright, if it's inside, if it's outside. That's a good use for it. That I do agree with. You talk about, Joe, getting it right. Well, that can help you get that call right. But there's so many other areas where it could benefit.
Of all the field goals and extra points, how many times a year does a ball fly directly over the top where you need that analysis?
Maybe two or three times.
Very small percentage.
Maybe.
I like it if it helps correct any issues you have there. But what about the catch? Can we get a definition of a catch? That should be the NFL's number one priority heading into the season.
Dallas Cowboys.
People are fed up with this. They're fed up with what appears to be a touchdown.
You go back to Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, Calvin Johnson wasn't a touchdown. Was that against the Bears?
Yeah, caught the ball and put the ground on the ground.
Or Dez Bryant reaching out after you already secured the ball.
Also switched it over to the opposite hand.
They're erring on the side of not catch.
Get the catch back.
On the side of catch.
They're making it more difficult for the officials. That's what the league doesn't realize they're doing. They're making life more difficult for the officials. The whole goal of setting rules is to make it so there's no gray area. Make it so that if something happens, it's either A or B. There is no C or D or possibly E, depending on the interpretation. A or B, no gray area. That's what you need to do with these officials. Do you know why? They're not full-time guys.
Complete the process of the catch.
Right. They've got other things going on in their lives, and if you're not going to take the cream of the crop and allow them to dedicate full-time, year-round to their craft, which is NFL officiating, then you've got to give them some assistance. And the best way to give them some assistance is through technology. People do not care if NFL games are extended by 7 or 8 minutes. People will watch football on Thanksgiving. They'll watch it on Christmas. They'll watch it on every imaginable holiday, Mondays, Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. No one is going to turn down the NFL. An extra 6 minutes isn't going to matter. Get the calls right. I don't care if you need to review everything. Get the calls right because I'm tired of teams missing the playoffs or getting shellacked early in the season because of some bad call.
Well, Dean Blandino is the vice president of officiating for the NFL. They had officials meetings this past weekend, and Dean Blandino went through a video breakdown to the officials of what a catch is and what not a catch is. And completing a catch, he said the receiver must control the pass. Once control is established, the receiver must get both feet or a body part other than the hands on the ground. The receiver must maintain control of football long enough to become a runner. I mean, these are things that were covered in the ops video rule book that they explained.
Here's your solution. This is forget about that. You're just going to spin your wheels reading all that bullcrap. This is how you determine what a catch is. Take 10 guys who are having some beers watching a game. Actually, make it 11 guys so it's an odd number. And have them watch it. And when they make their determination, that's the ruling. The Tuck rule, which screwed the Raiders how many years ago, was very simple. There's a rule in the book that says, well, here's a situation that was not a fumble. If 10 guys are in a bar and they see that play and all 10 of them say it's a fumble, it's a fumble. I don't care about some obscure rule 39B, subsection D, subsection 2.1. Hmm. All right? Take 11 dudes and let them sit around having beers. And when they see that play happen in the playoffs between Dez Bryant and the Packers, let them weigh in. And whatever their determination is, that's what stands on the field. It can't get any worse. Because last year they tried to change the catch rules as well, and it literally got worse. There were more blown calls in that situation.
I totally agree. You get 10 guys, whatever, and they're watching it, and they're in a different room, not even by themselves, and they get to watch it, and they get to push a button. Was that a catch? When a guy goes up, even with Tom Brady, you know I love the guy, know his family, whatever. When he's going to throw that ball, and he puts his other hand, touches that ball, and you know he was going to secure it, they knew it, and they call his goes a pass. You can't, it's a tuck rule because he's trying. That's bull crap. Dez Bryant, he goes up, the ball comes over his head, he catches it over his shoulders, catches it with his hands, then all of a sudden he puts it in his left arm. Then as he's standing for the end zone, he switches the ball over. He still hadn't touched the ground yet. He switches the ball over from hand. So you know that's clearly control if you can switch the ball from one arm to another. And then he extends it, and the ball bobbles when he touches the ground. That's a catch. That was so absurd. I'll never forget that play. And everyone says, no, that rule sucks.
In 10 minutes, we'll be joined by the TV voice of the Boston Red Sox, Dave O'Brien. The Giants are in Boston opening up a series at Fenway. Tonight, we'll get caught up on the Red Sox with OB. You also see him on ESPN. But next, the A's came away with a good win last night at the Coliseum, but all might not be good in the Astros clubhouse. It was visible in the dugout. The response from Mike Fiers toward his manager, A.J. Hinch, last night caught the eye of a lot of people. We'll talk about that next. 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to not Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
7:18, Roxy in for Chad along with Joe and Lowe, 95.7 The Game. As you heard, Red Sox voice Dave O'Brien joins us coming up in 10 minutes to preview the Giants and the Sox coming up from Fenway Park, a brief two-game series between the two teams. An off day for the Giants yesterday. Giants, again, will be off coming up on Thursday before a three-game set in the Bronx against the Yankees. The Giants come back. The Cincinnati Reds are in town on Monday, while for the A's, their homestand continues tonight. The A's have won 3 out of 4 to start the second half after taking 2 out of 3 from the Jays over the weekend, won the opening game of the series last night from the Astros. So the A's are feeling pretty good, and they're going to send Dylan Overton to the mound tonight in game 2 of that series against Houston. But all the feelings were not good on the other side. With the Houston Astros, it kind of boiled over there a bit in the fourth inning last night when the A's sent 11 to the plate and they scored 5 times to take the lead for good on the Astros in the ballgame last night. And it was an interesting mound visit from manager A.J. Hinch. He went out to the hill to yank Mike Fiers, who was struggling, as Mike Fiers lasted only 3 2/3 last night, giving up 6 runs, 5 hits. He did strike out 5, but he walked 3 through 2 wild pitches. He was all over the place, and he was starting to lose it, you could see. And A.J. Hinch went to the bullpen to try to keep his team in the ballgame. Mike Fiers wasn't happy to be yanked from the ballgame. And it's not often you see a pitcher show up as manager. They got into it on the mound. Fiers did come out of the ballgame as Houston went to the bullpen. But then in the dugout, it continued between Mike Fiers and A.J. Hinch. I won't say there was a physical altercation, but it was certainly a highly animated dialogue that started on the mound, continued in the dugout. Then your new buddy, Lo Neal, Carlos Gomez, who was a big Lorenzo Neal fan, by the way, when he used to watch you in the NFL, he got in the face of Mike Fiers. They got into it in the dugout, had to be separated. Then the conversation continued even in the top of the fifth inning when Mike Fiers was still in the ear of A.J. Hinch in the Astros dugout. And here was Mike Fiers after the ball game talking about his running dialogue with his manager, A.J. Hinch.
Being a competitive person out there, I want to stay in the game as long as I can. He just got to do his job, and I wasn't doing my job, so he, you know, had to take me out. And I'm never going to be happy with, you know, being taken out of the game. So, you know, we had a couple words here and there, but, you know, we smoothed it over, and just how it is when you're in a competitive game, and everyone wants to win so bad that, you know, sometimes it gets out of hand. But, you know, like I said, it's over. We're done with it, and, you know, we're going to move on and play tomorrow.
So that's Mike Fiers, Astros pitcher, took the loss in the ballgame last night. Now, post-game, he was saying all the right things. But his actions during the game, when he was yanked, his actions in the dugout, do you guys have a problem with the way Mike Fiers acted last night toward his manager, A.J. Hinch?
He's 6-4 with a 4.75 ERA. He stunk against the A's last night. That's what I would expect from a guy like that. I'd expect emotions to boil over. I'd expect frustration to settle in when you're in a spot that, I know people aren't going to want to hear this, but you're going against the team that you should have success against. More so than maybe going against the Indians lineup or the Rangers lineup. You should, when taking the mound against the A's, believe, at least to yourself, that you have a better chance for success given the A's and their output this year. This is not a knock on the A's. It's just very simple. This is a chance where you should have a better chance for success here than against Texas. And he went out and he stunk and he got yanked and he got emotional. Good for the A's capitalizing on it. It's the most important thing.
But should he have acted that way when the manager goes to take the baseball from him?
No. Guys went over and tried to calm him down and he still was going crazy. Why? Because the other team understood he was struggling. If you're out there and you're playing defense and the guy's not pitching well and you're giving up more booted in the dump truck, guys are going to get there and they're going to say, hey, look, calm down. And then when the manager pulls you out and then you continue to argue, guys thank you to step in. They know they can't stop the bleeding. If you're continuing to give up runs, that's what a manager supposed to do. He supposed to step in. He stepped in. Then he kept going off. And so guys stepped in to say, dude, calm down, because now you become a distraction. So he, as a player, and when you see it as a player and you see a guy and a coach going at it, after a minute and you're still in the dugout, like, that's enough.
I'm all for a player being emotional. And look, there's many ways that a player can show that he cares. And I think that's an exaggerated way for people. Oh, see, look how much Mike Fiers cares. He really wants to compete and win. Okay, fine, I see that. There's other ways you can show it. I do have a problem with a player showing up as manager. You got to have respect for the position. He's doing in what's in the best interest of the team. And the best interest of the Houston Astros at the time was to get Mike Fiers out of the game.
Sit his ass down. That's right.
And you hope. Look, I understand a player wants to compete.
Sure.
And he doesn't want to be yanked out of a ball game. They want the ball in their hands. That's what a pitcher does. But at the end of the day, you have to understand it's not personal. He wants the team to succeed, and that's why he was taking him out of the ballgame. And that's why I always have a problem when pitchers show up managers like that.
And that's why the manager's trying. You see the manager. He was being cool. He wasn't. But at the same sense, he's trying to manage a team. He can't. And this the conversation should be afterwards. If the player want to go up, I've had conversations with coach.
Well, what was your experience like in situations like that?
I've had conversation. I dropped a pass or something happened, missed a block, and the coach pulls me out. And you know, and I'm standing on the sideline, you know, and I'm a pro, and I know I work hard. I know I don't necessarily make a lot of mistakes. It's something I didn't do often, and you pulled me out. But, you know, as a coach, I respected it. Was I disappointed? Absolutely. The mess of my game flow, I want to get better. And I know sometimes they want to do it to make you better, and sometimes they do it to say, hey, don't be comfortable. LT fumbled the ball, coach pulled him out, and he's pissed. He wants to go. But at the same sense, we knew how to handle that. Because you're a pro. And when I go back into the meeting or go back into the next day and coach and he pulled me out, I said, coach, you pulled me out. I missed one block. I said, why don't you pull out Chris Dillman or why don't you pull out him? That ain't my position.
So calling out other players, causing dissension in the locker
room.
This is the low Neil I always was waiting to see.
No, but my point is, yeah, I would do it in a way where it's just me and him.
Oh, I understand. No, yeah, I'm just busting chops.
So it's like, I wouldn't do that out there on the field, but it's a situation where you're like, look, I understand, coach, I'm not perfect, and I miss blocks, but I wouldn't be condescending to him. I would treat him with the same respect. But at the same sense, you're just a place for it. A manager had a game to manage, and you have the pitcher going crazy, and everyone else is there. What does that do? That's a distraction for the team.
Is there a responsibility on behalf of the coach, the manager, what have you, in how they handle the individual? Because you've told stories before where there are certain ways coaches can talk to individuals
Absolutely.
And people respond, and then there are other ways where you talk about like LT and all you guys in the San Diego backfield when you played under Shulman.
Yeah.
Shulman used to get under the skin a little bit.
Absolutely.
And LT didn't like it.
I might not have liked it.
Is there a certain way they should handle you? Are we at a point now where the coaches and the bosses need to handle employees, a little bit more sensitive because it's 2016?
No, but you got to realize, even though my coach, I didn't like it, he's the coach. And I know that he's got pressure on him. If we fumble and we continue to play bad, it's an indictment on your coach.
His neck is on the line.
But this skipper and this manager, he went out, wasn't condescending, took the ball from him. But if you watch... When the guy's yelling, he's yelling at the coach is still looking out in the outfield. He's still keeping composure. It's a time and a place. That's the only thing I'm saying. I don't mind a player being upset because this player, he wants to eat. He understands he has to be on the field if he's going to get paid consistently or not get traded. I get that. But it's still a time and a place for it.
Well, the A's certainly benefited from the poor outing from Mike Fiers last night. As Kendall Graveman, the A's have won 5 consecutive decisions for Graveman, who in the A's also won 8 of his last 9 starts. So the A's have won 3 out of 4 to start the second half on this homestand, game 2 of the series with the Astros coming up right here on 95.7 The Game at 7:05 tonight. We'll jump over to the National League, where it's technically an interleague game because the Giants are in Boston, taking on the Boston Red Sox. We'll get an update and a preview on that series of the Boston Red Sox and the Giants from the voice of the Red Sox, Dave O'Brien, on Not Chad, Joe and Lowe, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Not Chad, Joe and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
In for Chad this week, Roxy Bernstein, along with Joe Fortenbaugh, Lorenzo Neal, 95.7 The Game. A's and Astros tonight at the Coliseum, game 2 of a 3-game set. While the Giants are on the road, their road trip continues to start the second half. They're at Fenway Park tonight, as it's the Giants and the Red Sox. Jake Peavy for the Giants. Rick Porcello goes for Boston as the Red Sox trail the Orioles by 1.5 in the AL East with the Giants on top of the NL West. And we say good morning to the TV voice of the Boston Red Sox. You also hear him on ESPN. Dave O'Brien joins us. Obie, good morning.
Roxy, good to talk to you. Joe Lorenzo, good to talk to you guys.
Well, fill us in. What's going on with the Boston Red Sox here as we start the second half of the season?
Well, as you mentioned, they're in a dogfight in the American League. It's really a three-horse race at this point with Toronto and Baltimore. Sox trying to catch the Orioles. And the interesting thing is that if the Giants were playing Toronto or Baltimore, they would think, well, they all look the same. They're all pretty much the same club because they win the same way. A lot of big offense, a lot of home runs. They love to mash it. And pitching is a question mark, I think, in all three of those cases. So,
we got to try to clean it up, and hopefully Obi can get to a better spot as his cell phone cutting in and out on us. But this Boston team and this lineup, it is impressive. When you look at this lineup 1-9, now granted the American League has a little bit of advantage in these interleague games like the Red Sox will tonight because they get the use of a DH, so Big Poppy is available, as opposed to if this game was played at AT&T Park, no DH. So he probably can't play.
Let me tell you something. Here's your storyline for the next 2 nights when the Giants take on the Red Sox: the MLB's best defense against MLB's best base running team. Watch that little nuance of the game. If you really want to dive inside the details of the game and pay attention to something that people aren't necessarily always watching, Boston runs the bases better than any team in baseball. Bogarts, Betts, Jackie Bradley, 3 of the best base runners imaginable. The Giants, as we all know, one of the elite defenses in Major League Baseball. That is going to be the key to the next 2 nights.
Well, we got Obi into a better spot. Obi, again, appreciate your time this morning. And you're filling us in on the Red Sox in this battle in the AL East with Baltimore. To me, it's still a little bit surprising the Orioles are on top of the division considering how poor their pitching has been.
Yeah, that's the same thing that everybody in New England feels like too, Roxy, is that, you know, their pitching hasn't been great. Tillman's been outstanding at the top of their rotation, but why are they still there? Well, Trumbo's a big reason why they're still where they're in first place, and there are some other guys in that lineup who are having big years, but they're kind of a classic Earl Weaver team, you know, from back in the 70s, the three-run homer and let's try and hold you to less than three. That's how they play. But a lot of teams play that way in the American League East, quite frankly.
The voice of the Boston Red Sox, Dave O'Brien, joining Roxy, Joe, and Lowe here on 95.7 The Game. You know, Boston, much like the Yankees, much like the Giants, viewed as a team that goes out and spends a lot of money trying to buy their way into championship contention. When you have the means, go for it. But the one thing that kind of gets overlooked from a more national perspective is how great some of the young talent on the Red Sox has been. If you're building a franchise today between Bogarts, Betts, and Jackie Bradley Jr., who would you start with?
Well, of those three guys, Mookie Betts for me is just off the charts because he's such an athlete. He can do so many other things other than just swing the bat or play defense. He came up as a second baseman, and now he's an outstanding right fielder. I wouldn't say just a good one. I would say he's become outstanding. He wasn't initially. Hard work has made him much, much better out there. As you guys know, Fenway Park is no picnic in right field. It's the single most difficult place to play in the American League as far as outfield. It's a little bit like right field at your place in San Francisco. There's a lot of crazy places that baseball can bounce. I would say Mookie Betts, but close behind him, Xander Bogaerts, because he's become one of the great right-hand hitters in the American League. And just a couple of years ago, they moved him from shortstop to third base and were almost ready to say, hey, this kid can be put on the trade block because he wasn't swinging the bat. Defensively, he had been a little short with his range. Another guy who just went to work and made himself better. But they're both 23 years old. I mean, they're golden as far as the folks in New England and around the American League are concerned.
Pablo Sandoval had a much more successful run with the Giants than he has so far with the Red Sox. What's going to be the team's approach to the Panda moving forward?
Well, I mean, obviously he had surgery, so he's still recovering from that. And you guys have heard the old story before. He's got to lose a lot of weight. And what happens after that, I have no idea. The Red Sox are in very good shape at third base without him. And he lost the job before he got hurt in spring training. Dave Dombrowski came down to John Farrell, the manager, and said, you play the best guy. We're trying to win a pennant. Play the best guy. And the best guy was not Pablo Sandoval by a long shot. And it was Travis Shaw. So when Pablo comes back, assuming he's healthy and he's 30 pounds lighter, and those are giant assumptions, if he does, he still has to win his job back in some way, shape, or form, or move to another position, which I think is highly unlikely.
In your opinion, does he still love baseball, and can he return back to greatness?
I don't know if he was ever a great player. I think Pablo was a really fine postseason player, so my expectations are a little lighter than that. I think he can still come back and play, and I do see a little joy in that. At least the year before, we had seen more smiles. We had seen a guy who seemed to be enjoying himself. But you know what I think got him a little bit? I think Boston got him a little bit. This is a fishbowl, and I know in San Francisco, the way Giant fans react to their players is very different if you're struggling than I think the way they're reacted to here. You can really get buried mentally. You may put a big smile on your face, but you're reading it, you're looking at it, you're hearing what they're saying about you on talk radio. I think he heard a lot of that stuff, and I think it crushed him mentally in a lot of ways that first go around with the Red Sox. And I think it did steal some of the joy from him come the second year.
Dave O'Brien, the TV voice of the Red Sox, joining us here at 95.7 The Game as the Giants are in Boston opening up a series tonight. And Obi, with how well Big Poppy is playing, David Ortiz is having a phenomenal year. When a guy is in his final season, you normally don't see a player playing and hitting as well as Big Poppy is doing. It's hard to believe that this is going to be it considering how well he's swinging the bat.
Yeah, it is going to be, though, Roxy. He has said many times that he wishes he hadn't announced his retirement before the start of the season, because since he did, he's been pulled in a billion different directions instead of a million different directions, which is typical of David. But the season he's having is off the charts. He already has 34 doubles. He's on a pace for 60 doubles and 40 home runs. That's never been done in the history of baseball. And as you say, he's 40 years old. He's swinging the bat as well as ever. You know what his batting eye is like. His ability to determine a strike is incredible. It's the best I've seen in probably 20 years of covering Major League Baseball. He has an amazing command of the strike zone. But what he doesn't have command of is his 40-year-old Achilles. You know, both of his Achilles heels are killing him. It takes him so much time pregame to get ready just to swing the bat four times. He's a designated hitter. He's not playing first base. But it's tough for him. It's very, very difficult for him. It was all winter long just to get ready for this season. As the body gets older and those at-bats mount up and those years mount up, it's tougher and tougher mentally and physically to get ready to play, and he's ready to go at the end of this season. But he wants to go after an October run. He doesn't want to see the season end in September.
The voice of the Boston Red Sox, Dave O'Brien, joining Roxy, Joe, and Lowe here on 95.7 The Game. Two-part question for you. Number one, do you think the Red Sox gave up too much in their pursuit for Drew Pomerantz by giving up Anderson Espinosa? And number two, are the Red Sox done trading, or are they going to continue to be aggressive as we approach August 1st?
I think the second one, I think they are going to continue to trade. I think there's another big deal for Dave Dombrowski. And as far as Espinosa is concerned, we won't know for several more years. There's some who are talking about, well, he's a young Pedro Martinez. He's going to be maybe that good one day. But how do you know when he's that young? You know, he's in A ball. At this point, I don't know if they gave up too much, but Pomerantz will determine a lot of that too. If he pitches as well here as he did out there, then, you know, that's going to ease the blow on losing one of their top prospects. But before they made that trade, Dave Dombrowski got everybody together with the ownership and said, look, if you're comfortable, we'll make the trade, but if you think too much of Espinosa, I'm not going to make this trade. And in the end, the Red Sox said, we have to go for it. They look at this team, I think the ownership group, and they say, the offense is too good, Ortiz is too good in his last year, we have to go for it. And that means not just a wild card, that means going for the division.
Well, Obi, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for chiming in and catching us up on the Red Sox, and I hope to see you soon.
Thanks, guys. Looking forward to the series. Thank you very much.
Dave O'Brien, the TV voice of the Boston Red Sox, as the Giants are in Boston at Fenway tonight, opening a two-game set with the Red Sox. Coming up, the A's had the good win last night, and there's a reason why the A's came away with a win. Yes, Kendall Graveman pitched beautifully again for the A's, but there's a bigger connection to the victory. That's straight ahead, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to not Chad, Joe, and Lowe on 95.7 The Game.
Coming up at the top of the hour, joined by Brian Kenny from MLB Network. You can follow him on Twitter at Mr. Brian Kenny, as he recently wrote a book. So we'll talk about the book as well as what's going on in Major League Baseball with the A's and the Giants and the pennant races around baseball. And our partner here, Lorenzo Neal, had a hand in a victory last night.
Yes.
Is he the reason why the A's beat the Astros last night?
I'd say yes. Without Lorenzo Neal taking batting practice, yes, the A's are sub 500.
This is true.
And they're sub 500 last year, too. With Lorenzo Neal taking batting practice, they've never, ever lost. They're perfect. They're the best team in the history of baseball when Lo Neal takes batting practice with them.
Your numbers is unbelievable.
Have you thought about spending more time over there? And you know what? Forget about that question. How was the experience?
It was, you know,
take us through it.
It was absolutely unbelievable. Get there, me and Cody head over to the park, take Bart over, and get into the clubhouse, and getting to see the equipment guy and get me set up with uniforms. And
what'd they deck you out in?
You know, I had the shorts. I got the shorts. I got the shirt. I got the socks, the long tube socks. You know,
yeah, I saw the picture that you didn't pull the socks all the way up. No, you should have. It's a good look.
Show off the calves. He's got to show them off. That's why he didn't pull them off.
And it was they were too tight to pull over the calves. It's pretty
His
big calves.
Calves are too big.
Yeah, so I couldn't do it, Joe. Couldn't get them over. Joe was,
we'll blame the A's for that. We won't blame you. You know, they should have known bad calves O'Neal was coming in for batting practice.
Now, to the equipment man's man, to his credit.
DeVos. Okay.
DeVos, credit. He's like, I said, I don't know if you guys got a hat to fit my. He said, yep.
They had something for that dome?
They had something for a dome. And he said, I have one more size that's bigger, so I didn't even get the biggest size. So I was like, wow.
So you pushed the envelope.
Pushed
you were right there at the top of Mount Everest,
right,
but you
there
weren't necessarily at,
yes,
the pinnacle.
I was kind of shocked.
So they got you the big dome cap. Yeah. Are there any other players on the team that wear that big dome cap?
No, and he was like, well, I was one size away, and he goes, that cap is usually for the guys that are juicy.
It's usually for the mascot.
I'm just kidding.
Hey,
you're gonna get yourself in trouble. All right, so
they make you go pee in a cup. Either.
Right.
So
no.
you saw Bomel. What did Bomel say?
Hey, Lorenzo, it's great to see you here. And the first thing he said, hey, look, I said, we'll get some advice for you. He said, take your time, and we can do this again. He was setting me up. He already knew that it probably wouldn't be You know, hitting home runs, but he just wanted me
it's
to know.
It's a special skill set. Right. You don't just walk into the Coliseum and start hitting home runs. For people to just assume, well, it's Lo Neal, he's going to knock it out of the park, it takes a skill to be able to do that.
It's a lot going on. You're right.
So for the listeners out there, you did not knock one out of the park.
No, did not knock one out of the park.
How did you fare, though, would you say? How would you grade yourself?
You know what? For the first time actually playing fast and being able to play, getting up there first time ever, I mean, I thought I did well. Because of the fact that, I mean, I've done softball where I've hitting softballs and taking them deep and go out there and mess around, but never in that type of environment, never went to batting practice, never done any of this stuff, or, you know, went into the batting cages and go hit that stuff. Never done it.
This was the toughest pitching you ever faced.
Yes. Okay. He was throwing a little heat, man. He was throwing some heat.
What do you want? You want it on a tee?
Yeah, I wanted an underhand for I could really rip it.
I want to see, like I've said
he's
to you
used
before.
Used a softball. They throw it underhand.
I want to see Batman. I don't want to see Bruce Wayne. If I come out to watch Lo Neal, I want to see Lo Neal take cuts. If he doesn't put it out of the park, I'm not going to boo the guy.
No chin music. They didn't come up and in on you.
No.
They're worried about Lo Neal charging them out.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a problem.
That would have been a serious problem. Now, I'll tell you right now. Ron Wash was unbelievable. Anna, you always talk about this guy and what he's meant to this organization.
Wash coached you up a little bit?
He coached me up phenomenal. Went up the first time, really kind of struggled, but hit a couple, didn't really. Second time, Ron got me to get that wrist going, turning it over, making sure, making cuts, so made a lot better contact. But just the whole experience, I mean, they really treated me really well there.
You got to talk to Ron Wash about life, too, didn't you? Didn't he talk to you about Simeon and how far he's come?
Absolutely. I was like, man, how'd you get this guy going? I said we're on radio. Sometimes we want to run him out of town. He goes, during those tough times with players, if you're a good coach or a good manager, he goes, those are the times that you'd fall on the axe. That's the time you fall on the sword for your players. When they do well, you praise them. He said, Simeon's a guy that I knew was going to. I knew it. Everyone talked about this guy, but I could see something because I know he had good work ethic. I know this was a guy that wanted to get better. He was preparing himself. And he said, he had to trust the process. He goes, you got to get guys that want to trust the process. He said, a lot of guys that come in, he goes, hey, and I told him, how is it being an A? And he goes, a lot of these guys, when they come here, it's not that they're necessarily all-stars. They're guys sometimes are on their last leg. Guys sometimes that need to rekindle their career. And he goes, and some of these guys are broken, and they come here with their ways and thinking, and sometimes I have to let them know, look, do this. And they're like, wait, coach, they don't want to buy in yet. And, you know, he said after 50 at-bats or sometimes 60, could have been fixed earlier, finally they come and say, hey, coach, what you got for me? Until they're ready to trust the process and willing to sell out and be saying, look, how do I get coachable? How do I get developing to become a better defensive player, better offensive player? Sometimes they'll struggle. And he said, once you have them there, he said, that's when they're willing to learn. That's when they're willing to trust the process. And he goes, him as a coach, he has to also understand that he doesn't know everything. He's willing to listen to guys. And he just really, really talked about life and the different things that he went through as a man coming up. His experience is how to grab these young men and giving them opportunities and still giving them a voice to be able to play baseball.
All right, I have a series of questions coming up for you, and they are going to get more and more ridiculous as we work our way through.
Sure.
The third of which is going to be open to everyone. Question number one, do you feel that after coaching you up for 30-plus minutes, Ron Wash watched you do BP and then possibly went home and considered a career change? Okay. I just wanted to get that out there because I found that.
What, you wanted to come in every morning and coach him up?
Washington went home and was like, I got to rethink this whole baseball thing. Forget about the work I've done with Marcus Simeon. I couldn't even get bat on ball with Lo Neal. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, number two. Now, here's a serious one.
Yes.
If you had 1 year to train and you went back next year on this date for batting practice, could you put one in the bleachers?
No question.
You think with 1 year to train, you'd be able to go yard? And it would be a typical batting practice session. I'm not saying you get two pitches. You get a series of pitches.
Exactly.
You get a fair shake. You're not going to be there all afternoon.
No. And it's not a pitcher trying to throw heat and get me out. Just a regular batting.
I have a feeling that this guy wasn't throwing heat. I have a feeling he was throwing typical BP.
There was zip on it, but it wasn't exactly
gas.
That's what I'm saying. No, at that like he was throwing yesterday.
Yeah, 1 year of training for the exact same scenario you had yesterday, could you put one out?
Without a question. Question.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think so, too. When you're training, I find it hard to believe. You can hit a golf ball 300. If you're
too strong,
you learn torque, how to get those glutes into it.
Absolutely.
Those are big glutes. There's a lot of power back there that you were unable to activate, as Tiger Woods likes to say.
Absolutely.
Okay, now question three. This is for everyone. This is completely unrelated to everything
Anna,
we're talking about.
At him, Anna.
But I want to see where everyone comes out on this. I saw this on Twitter yesterday. It blew my mind, so I need to throw it to everyone else.
Okay.
If you get 20 half-court shots, you need to make two. 20 half-court shots, you need to make two. If you do, you get $30 billion. If you fail, you spend 4 years in prison. Would you step up and take the challenge?
I got to make 2 out of 20?
You're going to make 2 out of 20 from half court.
I'm in.
2 out of 20. But if you do not hit two, you're going to prison for 4 years.
I'm in.
And not country club prison, San Quentin.
I'm in. Because
if I got to train, yes, I'll do it.
Last time I did it, and we do this from time to time at all the basketball games that I do, and I made 4 out of 10 from midcourt.
But you didn't have 4 years of pressure.
I didn't have pressure.
As a deterrent.
You're right. I didn't have that pressure.
You're going to be up there.
I only
a little
had the pressure
there,
of my colleagues and my crew watching me, and one of them was on video. We tweeted it out. But I made 4 out of 10.
You would do it, and $30 billion. Life's over.
Yeah, I would.
Low?
I'd do it.
I wouldn't do it. I don't need the money.
Oh, you know what? You know, fun, man. Okay.
No, not that I have money.
Thanks.
No. I
just Anna, don't. Yeah, let's just move on to someone.
It's not worth it. I'd rather be poor.
All right, fine. Okay. You're a rookie in New Orleans. You got nothing, and you're probably going to get run out of the league. Now the question's to you.
I don't think I would. Okay. I think I. Yeah, that's a great question.
Would you do it? Would you do it?
I don't think I could.
That's what I'm saying.
When I read 4 years in prison, I'm like, you know what? I'd rather just go out and I'd rather work hard.
That's my point.
No, your point was I've already made a bunch of money. I don't need to do something like this.
Did I say I made the money? I said I don't need the
money. Run
back
the
tape.
Yes,
you said I don't need the money.
I just said I don't need the money. It's not that important.
You put all of us in our place.
No.
You look down on all of us.
Wait, time out.
It's very condescending.
Listen to me.
Sorry, I got my wallet. There's $30 billion in it.
No.
Lorenzo Neal.
Guys, I don't need to take that risk. I've got 10,000 rental properties down in Fresno. I'm the king of Fresno, guys.
You just said you wouldn't do it because you don't need the money. It's not that risky.
I said I would rather work.
Right.
Not I'm 16-year NFL veteran.
You don't have the confidence that you could do it.
Correct. Okay. I would not want to take the risk. I don't think I can make the two. I would not. The deterrent of prison is not worth $30 billion. Prison terrifies me.
I'm working now. Of course.
It's why I will not hack your email later for scouting reports.
It scares the bleep out of me, too.
Yeah, but you're going to
take the
shots.
But I have confidence that I can do it.
You doing it, Anna?
As feisty as I am, I don't think I'm going to last in prison, so I'm not doing it.
Physically, could you get a ball from half court to the rim?
Can I do a granny shot?
You can do it however you want. You just got to shoot from half court to the rim with no contraptions.
Would you do it at the three-point line?
You couldn't granny shot from half court to the rim. You really think you get that far?
Oh, yeah, I could totally do that. From granny shot? Heck yeah.
That's harder.
And you wouldn't take the option.
How about
No.
How about three-point shot? Would you do it for...
No. Stop trying to screw up.
I'm trying to get her. Anna. I'm just talking about Anna.
Three I could potentially make, but I'm not going to...
She wouldn't do it. She wouldn't even do it from a three-point line.
Because you know what? It's going to get in my... I'm going to get in my own head.
Yeah. You don't want to go to prison for 4 years.
I agree.
All of a sudden you
I
get
know,
to
but
the
we don't all have
son,
all that real estate and all the money we made from our NFL careers. Some of us really have to consider this question.
No, take prison out of it, and I would do it.
All of a sudden the yips come in. That's all I have to say.
$30 billion, or you go sit in the stands and have a root beer float. Sure, I think maybe, you know, I'd do it too. In that situation, I'd do it
too. So we got the same thing, me and you're saying the same thing. We don't want to go to jail.
Someone get me a dozen eggs for this guy's shoes and his big dome hat the A's gave him.
I can't believe you would do it, bro.
I can't believe I'm the only one that would do it.
I would do it.
4 years in prison?
4 years in prison?
Roxy, if I get to eight or nine shots and I haven't made one yet, there's going to be full-on panic.
I'm going to tell him I would quit. You would quit after 10 shots if you didn't make one?
You can't quit.
You would like, I'm done.
No, you go
to prison. Sorry, you're going to prison.
Roxy, you'd be the prettiest
communal shower. Communal showers too low. You don't get your own shower. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I get 30 billion. I ain't going to prison.
That's the way I'm looking at it. I'm making, believe me, I'm making two. I'm making it.
You want your cornbread?
I'm almost thinking, like, if I just bet him $500 right now, could he hit 2 of 20? If I just put that little bit of pressure
on him. Let's go outside.
Considering 4 years of prison.
Where's the hoop? Let's go.
So if someone said,
we've done this before.
So if someone said, I'll give you $5,000, you let Lo Neal punch you in the face?
How are those two even related? How do you relate that to?
No, I'm not.
Wait a minute.
Punch you in the face.
Time out. What's the difference? Would you rather get punched? Okay, Anna, would you rather get punched in the face by me or try 30 shots for $30 billion?
Listen to this guy. No.
Unreal. Unreal.
Whoa. That's the same deal.
You know what?
No, it's
take
not.
Take a playoff. We're going to go without the fullback here. We're going to go four wide receivers.
It's time for an update soon.
We're going to go four
wide
receivers.
We're switching gears. Back to
take a playoff.
It's a baseball topic with Brian Kenny from the MLB Network. This will continue through the break. I know it will.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a great question, though.
Not Chad, Joe, and Lowe, 95.7 the game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.